Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to the final regular season edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. The playoffs are looming ahead, and we are here to help you get the best possible playoff positioning for your team. For some of you, that means turning a 3 seed into a 1 seed. For some of you, that means turning a team that's out of the playoffs into the playoffs.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, that is the voice of Scott Fish, my other co-host today, Brian Johnson. Hello, guys.
Hey. What's up, guys?
It's very, very... Is this officially nut-cutting time? And if so, what nut? And who cuts nuts? Seriously, who's sitting around cutting nuts?
Don't you crack them?
Yeah, you crack them.
You cut the shells, okay. Not the nuts, right? And you crack the shells. You don't cut them. I mean, imagine if you took some big cleaver to a walnut. You'd lose a finger before long. We've got plenty to get to over the course of this show, including 9 players not normally your starting lineup. I've got a stone-cold winner at tight end for you that you're going to hear. Take a chance on me later. We'll answer 3 tough questions and letter grades for all the notable players in all the games, beginning with the Saints taking on the Jets. Alvin Kamara coming back. Perfect timing for those people that were languishing for a month without Alvin Kamara, and we probably don't even have Mark Ingram to muck up the works.
Yeah, Alvin Kamara walking pretty much right into a fantasy Fonzie. In this matchup against the Jets, with Mark Ingram unlikely to play due to
COVID.
An A for Kamara. The Jets have allowed the most fantasy points to opposing running backs. It's pretty simple here. And they also, as in the Saints, might get left tackle Teron Armstead back, who hasn't played since week 9, or has played in just 1 game since week 9. So if he comes back, that bodes well for Kamara. But he gets an easy A either way. The wide receiver situation, not so easy. Deontay Harris was looking really good, but he's now suspended. Wow.
That's a thing that lingers all the way back to last summer. Right. Yeah. And they finally rule on it now.
Yeah. I know. Kind of weird. And I mean, we'll talk about who's throwing the ball, quote unquote, going to throw the ball for the Saints in a second. So Tre'Quan Smith and Marquez Callaway, I got them both on the bench. Neither one has really distanced themselves as a wide receiver. One, Harris was doing that, but again, he's suspended. So even though the Jets are holding opposing wide receivers to less than 12 catches, 160 yards per game, it's really because they're so easy to run on. So long story short, benching the wide receivers. I am going to heave a harpoon at Nick Fournette, though. Tight end Nick Fournette caught 3 of 4 targets for 48 yards last Thursday from Taysom Hill. The Jets are allowing more than 5 catches, 64 yards per game to tight ends. Mm. They've surrendered 3 touchdowns to the position over their last 2 games, the Jets have. So Nick Fournette, especially a daily dart, is worth a harpoon, a sea dart, as we like to call them here. And lastly, for the Saints, Taysom Hill. Gonna give him a B, but be warned. I mean, he could go completely belly up, as we all know. He could throw 3 picks.
Or the other way.
Yeah, it's one or the other. It's really one or the other. I'm leaning towards the other.
Because it's the Jets.
Because it's the Jets, who have allowed multiple passing touchdowns in 8 straight games, with the most recent performances going to Gardner Minshew and Tyrod Taylor, I'm sorry. You know, Taysom Hill almost on par with those guys as a passer, but of course, most dangerous on the ground. Surprisingly, only one opposing quarterback has seen more than 4 rush attempts against the Jets, and it wasn't Josh Allen who faced them recently. He had just 2 rush attempts, so not a lot of mobile quarterbacks on tape against New York. But Tyrod Taylor had 30 yards on 2 carries just 2 weeks ago. So Taysom Hill probably gonna have a pretty good game here.
I've got an A grade.
He's his own guy in that respect.
Yeah, I got the B to bake in the risk of him. Potentially just
He's got the foot injury, but they took him off the injury report on Friday. So fully healthy, fully mobile. I'm in on Taysom Hill big time against the Jets.
There are not a lot of Jets to be into this week, but Ty Johnson, though, going to give him a C based on expected volume. Michael Carter still on IR. Tevin Coleman has been ruled out with a concussion. So Ty Johnson should be the guy. The Saints are a brutal matchup, though, for running backs, both on the ground and in the air. They're allowing less than 98 combo yards per game to the position. That's second fewest, but Johnson should see 15 to 20 catches, I guess, unless Austin Walter.
Yes.
Steals some touches, which he might, but he's on the bench, Walter is. But
no,
I'll give a C to Ty Johnson. Elijah Moore, I'll give him a C if he plays. He's been questionable with a quad injury. 12 targets last week, so the concern with Zach Wilson coming back quarterback out the window, he was looking Elijah Moore's way.
And actually, Zach Wilson played the best game of his career last week.
Yeah, he looked a lot better. Spoiler alert, he's going to be on the bench, though, Zach Wilson is. But Elijah Moore, a C if he plays. If he does not, I'll give Jameson Crowder a C. Crowder on the bench, though, if Moore does play. Crowder saw 6 targets last week, caught 4 of them for 60-something yards. That's double-digit PPR points, so he's viable if Moore is out. But if Moore plays again, Crowder on the bench and Zach Wilson bench. But hopefully better days ahead for Zach.
Jaguars take on the Titans, Scott. We're going to do a deep dive a little later in this show on James Robinson, but let's note he's coming off a pretty tough game, and now he goes up against a shockingly competent Titans run defense over the past, I don't know, 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, and Robinson is actually the guy who had a 100-plus yard day against that same Titans defense right before that 5 or 6 game stretch where they haven't allowed a back to top 70 rushing yards. Right now, it's a banged-up version of Robinson who was inexplicably benched last week after a fumble that he didn't even lose. He's fumbled 2 games in a row, hasn't lost them. Before that, he hadn't fumbled in 23 games. It's not even an issue for him.
Well, but Urban Meyer needed to send a message. We don't recover our own fumbles on this team.
And I'm going to categorize this as a sneaky, squeaky wheel game for him, because I think Urban Meyer took a ton of heat from that, and other teammates spoke out
about this.
Yeah, this week. I think Robinson actually gets his. I have a C grade on him. You could talk me into a B just on the amount of volume, but I am worried at how much the Titans have improved over the last half a season. So I have a C grade on him. But I can go B. Somewhere in between a B and a C.
That's called a C.
Okay.
All right.
In the pass game, I have him on the bench. Trevor Lawrence looks terrible. I rewatched that game. He's throwing it at people's feet.
His accuracy is horrible.
It's just terrible.
He throws the least catchable pass of any NFL starter.
I agree with that statement. Rewatching that game, it was gross. You might say, Treadwell's got 14 targets in the last 2 games.
He's, nobody's saying that.
Yeah. I saw him picked up in a couple leagues. A third of his yards in the last 2 games came off of one play where the defender fell down.
I would take that.
So, no, bench the entire passing game. It's just Robinson with a grade on that side. Over on the other side, Tennessee Titans, I have Ryan Tannehill on the bench. I'm sorry. Just 2 multiple touchdown passing games this season. Just 2.
Wow.
After being so efficient over the last couple of years. He's rushed for a touchdown in 5 separate games, but you can't count on those. And he's had a ton of low yardage days. The Jags D has been really, really improved. We've talked about that on the show for a few weeks now. Stafford lit them up last week, but before that, they'd held the previous 5 guys, 4 of the previous 5 guys under 200 yards.
Yeah.
So I have Tannehill on the bench. Yep. Passing game, however, I think you can make some work out of it if he concentrates his passes, which he does, on basically 2 guys. Julio Jones, he'll be back, and he gets Shaquille Griffin, who will likely be back. So I only have a C grade on Julio Jones, mostly because he's a 40 to 60 yard guy this year, but he has that explosive upside.
And which he's shown in 1 game this year.
And A.J. Brown's not there. So they might lean on him a little more. And also, players have gotten 6 targets against the Jags. 12 of them topped 100 yards or scored, and 4 of the other ones topped 60 yards. So, like, if he's going to get 6 or more targets, it's possible. It's possible he reaps the day. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. I have a C grade on him, too.
I think so, too.
I think if Shaquille Griffin takes Julio, he's going to have some open time out there. I've just listed off what some wide receivers do with 6-plus targets. I think both Julio and him get 6-plus targets. He has 12 targets in the last 2 games. I have a C grade on him. I kind of like him here.
You can make a good case that he's safer than Julio Jones.
He gets red zone targets, too.
Mm-hmm.
In the running game, Jeremy McNichols is likely to be back, which I think
mucks up the works.
I think it bites into Hilliard is what it does. I think Deonta Foreman still gets his 15-plus touches on the ground and a little bit of receiving, just a tiny bit, just enough to get him the volume C for me. The Jaguars have been pretty good against the run this year, but they've given up 100-plus rushing yards in three straight, and I think the game script here helps Foreman. Mm-hmm. So C grade for him.
Yeah, he's built for goal line use, and the others really aren't.
Yep, that's what I had written down. Goal line use and, you know, playing with a lead.
Yeah, Foreman startable in a pinch.
Yep.
Cowboys take on Washington, and I've moved Zeke up to a C grade from the bench he was at after we learned that Tony Pollard has a torn plantar fascia. And apparently it's the best case scenario is the tear, the complete tear. And he may actually play on it. But still, you got to figure that that's going to have a pretty significant effect on Pollard's running game and total usage. So even if he does play. So we'll start Zeke here with a C grade, but only a C grade.
Ezekiel Elliott.
All right. Because Washington ranks number one in total yards allowed to runners at just 93 total yards. And if he's going to split that, like, I don't know, 70-30 with Pollard, you know, we're knocking him down to like 60 yards. Now, the good news is Washington has allowed a touchdown in 9 different games. So your best hope here is for a score for Zeke, which could happen. And that's why I'm keeping him with a C grade.
9 times. I did it manually. I don't have access to the
9
button bar.
9 times.
9
Fish, you got to be the backup button bar guy over there.
Yeah, that's very important. Key work over there. Let's go to the passing game, starting with C.D. Lamb. He gets a Washington defense that has allowed at least 90 yards or a score to the opposing number one receiver in 4 consecutive games. C.D. Lamb is clearly the number one receiver for Dallas. With the return of Michael Gallup, Lamb is playing much more from the slot, and that's where he's going to find Danny Johnson, who has been handling slot duties for Washington over the past couple of games. He's given up a passer rating of 102 in his coverage, and Lamb has a positive matchup on the rest of the cornerbacks as well if he doesn't line up in the slot. So an A grade, like usual, on C.D. Lamb. Everybody else, though, I've bumped down to C grades because Washington's pass defense has improved a lot, and particularly against non-number one receivers. For Amari Cooper, over the 4-game win streak, Washington's allowing the 5th fewest receptions and 11th fewest yards per game, and non-number one receivers are averaging fewer than 2 receptions and 23 yards over the last 4 games. So Cooper, just the C grade. Ditto with Gallup for really all of the same reasons. Let's talk about also C grade. Let's talk about Dalton Schultz, who comes in with a C grade, almost went B here. He's playing 96% of the snaps since Blake Jarwin went down, and he's averaging 7 targets, 4 catches, 50 yards over that span, which is pretty good. Washington's allowing a healthy 5 catches and 58 yards per game to tight ends, and they've given up the 7th most red zone targets to the position. So Schultz got a decent chance of scoring in this one. Still only have the C grade on him because he really hasn't been a consistent fantasy producer, even with Jarwin out. All right, let's go to the other side for Washington. During this 4-game win streak, Antonio Gibson has been a monster, averaging 27 touches for 107 yards and almost a score per game. I think you can safely expect more high volume from Gibson, and particularly if J.D. McKissic can't go, and we won't know. He's shaping up as a game-time decision. Opposing backs against Dallas who get 17 carries or more are averaging 100 total yards and 0.6 touchdowns per game. And in 2 career matchups with Dallas, Antonio Gibson has totaled 40 carries for 243 yards and 4 touchdowns in 2 games. Dallas, typically pretty stingy against running backs. They've only allowed 82 rushing yards per game and 6 rushing scores per game. So it's not an easy matchup, but on sheer volume, I'm keeping an A grade.
He's like a
Antonio Gibson.
Like, he's a bell cow and a workhorse combined somehow.
Oh, I like that. Could he? Here's your... It's a sleigh bell, maybe, or a... I don't know. It's a... Here.
There you go.
That might be the answer for Antonio Gibson. Let's go to the passing game. You know what? I did not mention Dak Prescott's grade. I'm sorry about that. Back to Prescott for just a second. A B grade on Dak Prescott. If we roll together Lamb and the C grades they gave to Cooper and Gallup and Schultz, this is, again, an improved formerly Redskins, now Washington defense. Over the past 5 games, Washington allowing just 223 passing yards and 1.4 touchdowns, so I can't get him quite up to the A grade I'd like to give Dak, and disappointed me last week, too. I have an A grade on him last week. He didn't do much. All right, so now back to the Washington passing game. Terry McLaurin's been very hit and miss. which is weird because the bit on the story on McLaurin up until this year had been he'd been very safe, but this year very hit and miss, and I worry a lot in this game. On the plus side, opponents' number one receivers have generally fared well against Dallas, including recent good games from Tyreek Hill and Hunter Renfrow. Cowboys allowing an average of one touchdown per game to wideouts since week six. And I guess if there's one touchdown to go around, I don't, who else would get it but Terry McLaurin? So I've got to be great on him here, but just beware of the dud games that have surrounded much of his season. And I mentioned J.D. McKissic earlier. He's got the concussion. He looks like he's trending towards a game-time decision or some maybe something on Saturday or Sunday when we'll learn more. If you believe the Cowboys are going to get ahead by a lot and he's active, when Washington is losing is when you can play McKissic. Yep. So if you like Dallas in this game, give a C grade to McKissic. And it turns out Ricky Seals-Jones has a decent chance of going in this game.
Did you just leave it up to the listeners to grade him?
No, I give him a C.
If you think Dallas is going to be ahead, you...
I usually don't do that, but I did. Ricky Seals-Jones is probably going to go. He sits 10th among tight ends in red zone targets, despite only seeing 34 total targets on the year. So they throw to him a ton in the red zone, which I love. Dallas is a plus match for tight ends. They're giving up the 11th most fantasy points per game to the position. So I've got a C grade on Ricky Seals-Jones. I'm keeping Taylor Heinicke on the bench. He's been a middling producer, plus Dallas's pass defense has improved a lot, allowing per-game averages of just 243 yards and 0.8 touchdowns over the past 6 weeks. And they've shut down far better passers than Heinicke lately. Kirk Cousins, Matt Ryan, Patrick Mahomes. Just not enough good targets for Heinicke as well.
The last 4 or 5 weeks, we've been saying, go grab Logan Thomas for this amazing stretch.
Yeah, now it's Ricky Seals-Jones.
Stays the same with Ricky Seals-Jones.
If Seals-Jones doesn't go, are you thinking about John Bates?
No, I will give you next segment. I will give you the sneaky, awesome tight end to pick up. The opportunity is golden, and he is available in your league.
You know I'm intrigued.
Seals-Jones is going to play, though. So
he's going to go. Regardless,
right.
We'll tell you who that is when we come back to take a chance on me after this. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. This is a segment we call Take a Chance on Me. Not nine players, not normally in your starting lineup. We'll tell you who they are, beginning at the quarterback position, and Scott Fish.
Yeah, I'm going with Jimmy Garoppolo, who seems to be a staple of this segment some reason. Yeah. I was just realizing as I was looking at it. Over the last five, the Bengals are allowing an average of 287 yards and two scores to opposing quarterbacks. In comes the 49ers, who over the last month are averaging nearly 30 points per game. There's an implied total of 50 here. I just like Jimmy G in this matchup for a score or two and probably somewhere around 250, 300 yards.
All right, your Take a Chance on Me quarterback, Brian.
The Texans are going back to rookie Davis Mills at quarterbacks.
Which is a good move. You may as well just rest of the season. They named
the
him. Sorry. Just find out what you got in him to make sure you know if he is a plausible starter going forward.
No doubt. And he's got the Seahawks at home this week, which is a pretty good matchup. Over the last 3 weeks, Colt McCoy, who is just Colt McCoy and didn't have DeAndre Hopkins, threw for 300 yards and two passing touchdowns. And Jimmy Garoppolo just did that last week without Debo Samuel. And Jimmy G is not all that great. So why not Davis Mills? And over Seattle's last five games, opposing quarterbacks are averaging 40 pass attempts per game. This feels like a spot where Mills will throw it 40-plus times. Seattle also just lost safety Jamal Adams for the season with a shoulder injury. Fellow safety Quandre Diggs, very questionable to play with a calf injury. So I'm kind of feeling a shootout in Houston. I'm liking Davis Mills, and you'll find him.
You know, you've kind of convinced me on this.
On the daily sites, for sure.
No doubt. Baker Mayfield was not playing well before the bye week, but he was also dealing with shoulder, foot, knee, and groin injuries. So presumably coming out of this bye week, you'd like to believe 2 weeks between games that he's in much better shape right now. And you'll remember early in the season through the first handful of games, he was actually pretty good when he was healthy. He gets the Ravens this week, and this is a wobbly pass defense allowing per game averages of 280 passing yards and 1.7 passing touchdowns over the past six games. If Baker Mayfield's going to get 280 and two touchdowns, I'm in.
Yeah.
And let's remember, the Ravens are now without cornerback Marlon Humphrey, their best cornerback who's lost for the season.
Mm-hmm.
Baker Mayfield.
I like it.
Let's go to the running back position. Your take a chance at me runner, Scott.
I'm staying with the San Francisco 49ers, and I'm going with Jeff Wilson. He practiced in full the last couple days. Him and Jamichael Hasty are the only two healthy running backs for the 49ers going into this game. And Jeff Wilson had four games with 15-plus touches last year, a few of them in the 20s. He had a 20-touch game just a couple weeks ago when Elijah Mitchell was out. I think he takes back that starting role for this game with Mitchell out.
Agreed. Brian, you take a chance at me, runner.
I'm going with the Seattle's Rashad Penny at Houston. Just talked about this game. Now, Alex Collins likely to make his return, but Rashad Penny was a first-round pick like 3 years ago, and he's healthy. So he's never been healthy, but he's finally healthy. He essentially split work with Adrian Peterson last week, who just looks washed than ever.
And Peterson, there's reports that Peterson won't even be active for this game.
Yeah, and he shouldn't be. And don't read into the three carries for 80 yards and a touchdown from Travis Homer. That came on a fake punt. So I feel it's a gut feel. Rashad Penny is going to be the lead back.
Well, that's
in this
all
game
it can be
against
Rashad Penny's given you no statistical analysis to suggest he's any good.
I swear, there's been like two games in his career he's been healthy and he's looked fantastic. And that's coming
on
Sunday.
I believe that is true.
And it's not hard to look fantastic as a running back against the Texans, who are allowing 153 combo yards and 1.25 touchdowns per game to running backs.
That the opportunity is there. Yeah. You're right about that. I'm going Chuba Hubbard as he takes on the Falcons. They fired their offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, mostly because he didn't run enough. Remember Matt Rhule saying he wants to run the ball 30 to 35 times? Well, if Cam Newton was my quarterback, I wouldn't want him to pass either. I would want to run the ball as much as possible, both with Cam and with Chuba Hubbard. Doing it during his five starts this year, Hubbard averaged 18 rushes, 83 yards. If those 18 rushes are going to be more now that Joe Brady's gone, well, maybe he's got 100-yard upside, and he ran for a touchdown and 82 yards against Atlanta already once this year. So Chuba Hubbard is my choice. Let's go to Scott and your receiver.
Yeah, I'm going with Josh Reynolds. He's been pretty on fire the last couple weeks, playing most of the snaps. He's got that rapport with Jared Goff. This week it came out they want Jared Goff to take more 20-plus yard shots, more shots deep down the field. He was actually near the top of the league in that category just a couple of years ago with McVay. Josh Reynolds, been the deep ball guy the last 2 weeks. Three targets over 20 yards against the Bears. Three more against the Vikings. He has three receptions over 25 yards. And his average yards per reception is 20 yards.
Yeah.
I think just a few deep plays, he's going to get it.
Okay. Brian, your take chance of me receiver.
Now, I was going to go with the Chargers' Jalen Guyton before Keenan Allen was ruled out. Keenan Allen now ruled out.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly still going with Jalen Guyton, who caught all four of his targets last week for 90 yards and a touchdown. It's still to be determined if Mike Williams is going to play in this game. That'll make this very much a layup, take a chance on me play. But the Giants are top five in targets yielded and touchdowns allowed to wide receivers. I might have should have went deeper with Josh Palmer, but Jalen Guyton, Josh Palmer can become very viable this weekend against the Giants.
They can be. Austin Hooper is my take a chance of me player, and I love this opportunity. Now, normally, Austin Hooper is part of a three-man Cleveland rotation to tight end with David Njoku and Harrison Bryant out. This week, that means with them out, Hooper's going to get all the work. So allow me to tell you what Njoku, Bryant, and Hooper together look like this year. If you give all of their average production to just Hooper, your average game is six catches, 72 yards, and half a touchdown. Who else is almost exactly six catches, 72 yards, and half a touchdown?
Travis Kelce.
Travis Kelce.
Yeah,
you've got Travis Kelce in usage for the Cleveland tight ends if you roll them into one guy, and that's Austin Hooper this weekend. Plus, the Ravens allow the second most yards and the fourth most touchdowns to tight ends. What a DFS play Austin Hooper is if you're struggling at tight end. Darren Waller, whatever.
He's out.
Austin Hooper. Well, that's the point.
Yep.
If you got Darren Waller, this is your pivot guy, Austin Hooper.
Oh, boy.
So safe to say across your leagues, you've been a Hooper scooper?
I've been jumping through Hoopers.
Okay. I think I like Hooper scooper better.
Yeah, I like Hooper. I do. That is pretty good,
That's good.
Falcons take on the Panthers, Brian. We can just dispense with the Kyle Pitts A++.
Yeah. We're not
going to get it. There's the Kyle Pitts fantasy Fonzie right there for you.
We're going to have an in-depth edition of Fantasy Football Weekly in the offseason.
Just devoted to this.
Yes,
Gilmore.
It'll be a very civil conversation, of course, but it's going to be a good one. We'll start with Pitts' opposition.
The sooner you acknowledge that I was right on this, the sooner we can just
move on. Well, there's still a lot of season to play, first off, but yes, we'll get it. Pitts has not lived up to his ADP, but neither have
this has been fun.
30 of the 40 players that were drafted before him either, but we're not going to get into that now. We're going to get into the Panthers and Chuba Hubbard, your take a chance on me running back charge. Mm-hmm. I also like Ameer Abdullah. I'm going to give him a C.
Wow.
In week 12, when Christian McCaffrey went down, Abdullah had 27 snaps to the 11 from Chuba Hubbard. So in PPR against a team like the Falcons, throw a dart at Ameer Abdullah. I know I am in a deeper league, so a C for him. Just a B for DJ Moore, the only wide receiver or tight end who matters on the Carolina Panthers at this point. But far and away, I've seen the most targets from Cam Newton, has notched the most yards, touchdowns, and first down conversions from Cam. The Falcons are allowing a healthy 14 catches, 160 yards, 1.25 touchdowns per game to wide receivers. Moore only had 4 catches for 59 yards when these teams first met in week 8, but still a B grade for him. Robbie Anderson on the bench. And Cam Newton, it's really going one way or the other with Cam. It's like he's going to go off, or he's going to go sit on the actual bench. Mm. So I'm going to cut it right down the middle, give him a B.
Boo.
Play it safe. I don't – A, C?
Well, you need to make this call, not me.
I'm leaning C. They're going to lean on the run game more so than not, I would think. And it could be Cam Newton, though. I don't know.
It could be Cam. Now, keep in mind, he got benched in their last game.
Yeah, he looked really
bad.
He
got benched 3 times last year.
I know.
That's the frustrating thing.
PJ Walker should be starting this game for Carolina, and unfortunately, he's not. So I'm going to see.
He's probably the best passer on the team.
Oh, for sure. Over to the he's the best. PJ Walker is the best passer in this game, and that's including Matt Ryan, who'll throw it out of the way. He's on the bench. 146 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions when these teams first met. He's just god awful. Cordarrelle Patterson is not, though. I'm going to give him a B. He had 35 rushing yards, 37 receiving yards in the first meeting, did catch a touchdown. Carolina is very tough on running backs and wide receivers alike, whatever you want to consider Patterson, but the guy's a unicorn. He really can't. I'm only benching him in one league, and it's a guillotine league where I'm in the finals, and I have like 5 stud running backs ahead of Patterson. He gets a B, and Kyle Pitts still gets a C. Brutal matchup on paper for tight ends. Pitts is a wide receiver, of course. Carolina treated him as such in the first meeting.
Gilmore shadowed him
in that game. Calvin Ridley did not play in that game. Calvin Ridley certainly not playing in this game. Pitts had his worst performance as a pro, just 2 catches, 13 yards. Not expecting a monster game, but talent and opportunity is still there. So a C for Kyle Pitts. And Russell Gage, I'll throw a C dart at him in PPR as well.
I'd even go to a B.
Think? A B? All right. Scott Fish
like
gives him a B.
I like Gage a lot this week.
All right. He missed the first meeting. Well, Kyle Pitts is going to get like triple, quadruple team because he's just such an amazing talent. So
there you go.
Yeah, Scott Fish.
Leaves Gage open.
I co-sign the B on Russell Gage.
All right. When we come back, more matchups for you, including 49ers taking on the Bengals. We've already talked about some of the 49ers that Scott Fish likes, including Jimmy Garoppolo, Jeff Wilson. How much upside do you have from guys like Brandon Ayuk? And what do you expect from Deebo Samuel if he plays on the groin injury? A huge conundrum for fantasy owners. We'll talk about that when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. It is the final segment of hour number one of Fantasy Football Weekly. This is a 2-hour operation. We're here to get you ready for the fantasy playoffs, your final playoff positioning potentially on the line in this week's game. Mm. Almost everybody's got some kind of movement. Almost nobody's locked into a particular spot quite yet.
Probably not.
We both agree, Scott, that the last spot in your playoffs should be awarded to not the team with the next best record, but it should be awarded to the team with the most points.
Yep.
or potentially the team with the best all-play record.
Yeah, something like that.
Yep, something like that, because and this is
a better indicator of a great team instead of schedule luck.
Schedule luck, because your team can't play defense. It's not your fault if your opponents have scored a lot of points. Your fantasy team doesn't play defense. So, yeah, be creative with that last spot and think about it for next year if you haven't already set that up. Let's go to some of our matchups, beginning with the 49ers taking on the Bengals. Scott, for the 49ers, you already talked a lot about Jeff Wilson at the running back position, our probable starter.
Yes.
Is Jamichael Hasty a possible play here or not?
I think he could be a dart throw if you're in a serious bind. I don't have a starting grade on him, but keep in mind the 49ers give their running backs 30 touches a game.
Mm-hmm.
And it very well could be 20 for Jeff Wilson, and Jamichael Hasty might be able to do something with the 10 he gets.
Yeah.
But I have him as the second end of those two, and I don't have a starting grade on him. In the passing game, my take a chance on me quarterback was Jimmy Garoppolo. I liked him for 250 to 300 yards and a couple scores. I don't know where it's going to go, but I have an A grade on Kittle because I think it's obvious at this point. He's just playing like a beast. Debo Samuel, if he goes, I have an A grade on him if he goes because he's just been too efficient and productive, and I don't think they will risk him if he's not good to go. I think with that groin injury, if he can go, he will go.
All right. I'm nervous.
I see the concern in your face.
Groin injury plus wide receiver equals trouble.
The Dalvin Cook thing from the other night, that's probably your concern. Is he could blow up. I'll give him a B grade. I'll give him a B grade out of that concern. How's that sound?
Dalvin Cook's groin isn't in his shoulder, though.
No. I'd like to see that. Dalvin Cook situation of should I start them? Could they re-injure? Could they leave type of situation? Fine, I'll give him a B grade. I still think if he's going, he's probably going to be a top 10 guy.
Okay.
Brandon Ayuk, I'm giving a B grade either way, if Debo goes or he doesn't. The top receiver against the Bengals, and this is if Debo doesn't go, has topped 95 yards in back-to-back. And the Bengals have allowed 5 receivers to top 80 yards and or score in just the last 2. So even if Debo goes, I think the second receiver can get some work here. Ayuk himself has topped 85 yards in 3 of his last 5, and he's consistently seen 6-plus targets. Even with Debo Samuel, he was starting to see that starting about the midway point. So I have a B grade on Ayuk. On the other side, I have a C grade on Joe Burrow. Only one quarterback has topped 250 yards on the 49ers, and that was all the way back in week 1.
Wow.
That was a long time ago. That was almost a full season ago. That includes 5 quarterbacks under 200 yards. They've allowed multiple touchdowns in back-to-back, but given the way this defense has held down quarterbacks and Burrow's 2 injuries, which supposedly he's been fine with this week in practice.
Yeah.
The best I can give him is a C grade because this is one of the better offense with the most weapons that the 49ers will have played this season.
Yeah.
So C grade on Burrow. Higgins, I'm giving an A grade to. He's just too hot, and he's turned into the player that he was last year. And Ja'Marr Chase has kind of taken a backseat.
Not kind of.
Yeah, and if you look at the early season stats, the targets and receptions, and they were going Higgins' way. Chase was just getting the big touchdowns.
Plays, yeah.
And we talked about that earlier in the year. Those big touchdowns aren't coming anymore. Mm-hmm. And Chase's best output in the last 5 weeks is 52 yards. He scored twice in that stretch. The upside is there. So I have a B grade on Chase, an A grade on Higgins, because I think he's going to get the bulk of the work. I have Tyler Boyd on the bench, just too inconsistent. Only topped 60 yards 4 times this year. Now we get to the running game. Joe Mixon has been dinged up and sick this week. Mm-hmm. He was dinged up last week. He came back in, scored a touchdown. He played the rest of the game. But he's been with an illness this week. I have an A grade on Mixon if he goes, because I think that means he's over his illness.
Yeah.
And so over the last 5 weeks, 49ers are surprisingly 4th worst against fantasy running backs, allowing 7 rushing touchdowns in those 5 games.
Mm.
Mixon himself has 9 straight games with a touchdown. I probably could have phrased that to get a 9 times out there, but
we'll work it in anyway.
Yeah. But keep an eye on that illness, because if he doesn't go, Piran becomes interesting in this spot. I would give him a C grade or maybe even a B grade just because of a ton of volume in a high
Niners
octane
run defense
offense.
Pretty good, though.
Yeah, it's just recently they're giving up so many touchdowns to running backs. But that's all I have for that.
Ravens take on the Browns. And on the Ravens side, I want to start with Devonta Freeman. Browns allowing 115 total yards per game to opposing running backs. That is the sixth fewest. I don't love this matchup. Freeman, though, averaging 17 touches per game since taking over as the starter and had 17 touches last time he played the Browns 2 weeks ago. But that only equaled 60 total yards, his second lowest output as the starter. I don't love him here, but just on volume, we'll give a C grade to Devonta Freeman. Let's go to the receivers now. Marquise Brown comes in with a B grade. After scoring six times in the first seven games, we're all like, Marquise Brown, every week starter, touchdown machine. He's now been held scoreless for a month. He'll face speedy cornerback Denzel Ward primarily this week, who's held opponents to just 25 yards per game in his coverage. Hollywood Brown tangled with the Browns for a 100-yard game in the last matchup in a score in two meetings last year. And Ward played every snap of the 100-yard game, so he could do a little something here. Also, monitor Cleveland cornerback Greg Newsom, who suffered a concussion in practice. If he misses this game, you could bump Marquise Brown up to an A. I'm putting Rashad Bateman on the bench at this point.
Yeah, you got it at this point.
Massive decrease in playing time the past 2 weeks. Apparently, the team has decided they don't think he's ready yet. And we're seeing a lot more of Sammy Watkins and Devin Duvernay. So he's out. Mark Andrews comes in with a B grade. Over the last 5 weeks, Andrews has seen a position-leading 47 targets. And in his last matchup against Cleveland a couple of weeks ago, Andrews caught 4 of 10 targets for 65 yards and a touchdown. Browns are kind of a middle-of-the-pack tight end defense, giving up the 19th most fantasy points on the year. But if you look at just the last 5 weeks, they've been the seventh easiest matchup for tight ends, so maybe trending the better direction here. So B grade on Mark Andrews. If I were to ask you guys and listeners, don't look it up, just top of your head, how many games has Lamar Jackson had a rushing touchdown in this year?
What if I know this answer?
Then don't answer.
Okay.
Don't play along.
I'll let Brian.
Three. Would be my guess.
How about one?
Yeah, that
one game with a rushing touchdown for Lamar Jackson this year.
Do you at least have two in that one game?
Yeah, two in
one
game.
That's good. But yeah, that sucks.
And he has exactly one touchdown by land, sea, or air in 9 different games this year.
Nine times.
Only one touchdown.
Only one touchdown. That's depressing.
He does have 200-yard games. That helps a little.
A 200-yard passing game?
No, two games where 100-yard rushing
games. Yeah. Yes. That certainly helps. It's 3 straight underwhelming fantasy games for Lamar Jackson, including a game against these same Browns 2 weeks ago when they held him to just 165 passing yards and 68 rushing yards and one score. Cleveland comes out of its bye allowing just 175 passing yards per game over the last 3. That is awesome pass defense. C grade on Lamar Jackson, and that is it. He's at this point, he's lost the benefit of the doubt. I can't put him on the bench because the rushing numbers keep him fantasy startable, but the passing numbers just aren't good enough.
Your grades are basically chopping my guillotine league right now.
I'm sorry chopping about that, me. Your team.
Yeah, it's getting hit.
Let's go to the Cleveland side. You may recall Baker Mayfield was my take-a-chance-on-me quarterback. Austin Hooper was my take-a-chance-on-me receiver. That leaves us with Jarvis Landry. You'll want to monitor his knee injury here. He's coming into this game as a game-time decision. You know how many touchdowns Jarvis Landry has on the season?
Zero.
He has commanded at least 8 targets in 4 of the last 6 games, and he is the best of the available receivers, assuming he plays for Baker Mayfield.
Didn't he have, like last year in Miami, I have like 110 catches and
he
like
did.
one
remember
touchdown.
I remember that season very well. Baltimore could, he'll go up against Baltimore's Tavon Young in the slot. He gives up a 73% catch rate. So I've got a C grade in Jarvis Landry just for sheer volume. He'll probably find his way to like 50-60 receiving yards. He'll be scoreless there. So a C grade on Landry. Your dart throw here is Donovan Peoples-Jones, a guy we mention on this show a lot who never quite seems to produce to the level we would like. He's shown flashes in the last month, producing a 3-game stretch in which he averaged 86 yards, and he scored 3 times. Baltimore secondary has allowed 4 100-yard receivers in their last 3 games and are now without Marlon Humphrey for the rest of the season, so an opportunity there. Let's go to the running game. Nick Chubb, in his last game against this team 2 weeks ago, He put up 16 rushing yards and 2 yards per carry, both his lowest numbers since his rookie year in any one game. Baltimore's run defense is fantastic, allowing only 72 rushing yards per game, fourth fewest on just 3.9 yards per carry to opposing running backs. Chubb just a B here, and I've got a C grade on Kareem Hunt, who will try to get something more done through the air a little bit. But this is also, very tough team to run upon, and I don't expect a lot there. And he was held to just 20 yards and 2.9 yards per carry 2 weeks ago. It's only the C grade on Kareem Hunt. Our final set of matchups is the Seahawks taking on the Texans. Brian, you already told us that you like Rashad Penny in this game, but let's flip it over to the passing game. What do you think about Russell Wilson coming off a nice outing?
Yeah, Penny was my take a chance on me running back. If I'm going to pick one from Seattle, it is him. To the passing game, and Russell Wilson, going to give him a B. He has not looked great or even really that good since coming back from injury, but he has topped 230 passing yards with two passing touchdowns in back-to-back games. Houston has allowed the third most passing yards, but just 17 passing touchdowns, which is less than 1.5 per game. That said, the Texans have allowed the most rushing touchdowns to quarterbacks. Wilson, still a threat on the ground. So after all that, I'm going to give him a B, as well as both of his wide receivers, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. The Texans are allowing the second most receptions and the third most yards per game to opposing receivers over the last 5 weeks. Lockett's been pretty good over the last two games. 3 catches for 96 yards, and last week, 7 catches for 68 and a touchdown. Hopefully he can stay consistent. Gerald Everett, though.
Dropped that brutal touchdown last week.
Almost resulted in interception. He also lost 2 fumbles, I think. Mm-hmm. He's in the doghouse, basically. I don't trust him to get enough playing time in this one. They might lean on Will Disley a little more at tight end for the Seahawks. So Gerald Everett is on the bench. Over to the Texans side, Brandon Cook's going to give him a B. He's seen a 30% target share when Davis Mills is at quarterback. The Seahawks have been somewhat tough against wide receivers lately, recently holding Devontae Adams and Terry McLaurin below their standards. But I mentioned in Take a Chance on Me, they will definitely be without starting safety Jamal Adams and likely without their other safety, Quandre Diggs. So a B for Cooks based on volume alone. Nico Collins, I don't expect much from him. He's on the bench, but it's still a good dynasty stash. Now, normally we don't talk about Texans tight ends, but
for good reason,
because Brevin Jordan and Pharaoh Brown last week combined for 6 catches on 9 targets. Sadly, they're not one person, but Brevin Jordan might not play in this game. If he does not, Pharaoh Brown walks into a matchup against the third easiest team against tight ends. That is the Seahawks, allowing 6 catches, 63 yards per game to the position. So Pharaoh Brown, keep an eye on him if Brevin Jordan is ruled out. Davis Mills is my Take a Chance on Me quarterback. I think he'll throw the ball at least 40 times in this game. And lastly, the running backs. We don't really talk about the Texans running backs much. Rex Burkhead is the starter.
Yeah.
A lot of work, pretty inefficient.
Yeah,
but,
work. It is a lot of volume against a bad run defense.
It is, but David Johnson
almost might Take a Chance on Me running back.
He's back this week, though, so I think that eats into the
But Johnson's Burkhead. Not getting much use either.
He was hurt last week. I don't know. I'm not recommending you start a Texans running back. That's all I'm saying.
Neither if you're in a pinch,
yeah, deep league in a pinch, then I think you could go Rex Burkhead. That's probably it. A couple of quickies for you between now and the end of this segment. Where, and I want the exact spot where Cooper Kupp will be drafted in fantasy leagues next year. I want the round and position, Scott.
Round 1, 6th spot.
Brian.
Yeah, 6 or 7, and probably going to be wide receiver 1, I would think, overall in drafts.
I mean, it's going to go Jonathan Taylor, then Javonte Williams, then A.J. Dillon, like all the ones people love.
I mean, still
not
think Davante Adams.
I'm joking.
Yeah. Davante Adams might go before Kupp in some leagues, but
I think he's going to go 3. Easily. I think you got the first 2 right. And then I think it's going to go Cooper Kupp 3 in part because the running back position burned so many people last year. There's going to be a greater willingness to pivot next year to go to wide receiver, and it'll be Cooper Kupp. When we come back, plenty more matchups and 3 tough questions. Play along as our panel of experts try to go 3-0. It's Fantasy Football Weekly, brought to you by GuillotineLeagues.com. Welcome back. Fantasy Football Weekly, hour number two. I'm Paul Charchi, and my co-hosts are Scott Fish and Brian Johnson. You can follow Scott at ScottFish24 on Twitter. Brian is at BTXJ on Twitter, and I am at Paul Charchian.
Tough question number one.
For the rest of the season, Aaron Jones will outscore A.J. Dillon by A, a lot, B, a little, or C, no, Dillon will outscore Jones. What do you think, Scott?
Okay. I'll start by ruling out a lot. I don't think, unless there's an injury, either one of these guys is going to outscore the other by a ton. Just because Dillon's been getting so much more work recently, it would almost require missing time. Although Dillon got more work in Week 12 after Jones' one-game absence, Jones wasn't 100%. The bye week's probably going to help that. Jones has a proven track record for, you know, being efficient at the goal line and a much smoother passer. He just looks like a much smoother passer. Even though Dillon can catch, he just isn't as smooth and isn't as efficient, doesn't get as much production from it. Even if they split more down the middle down the stretch, I still think Jones outscores him, not by a lot, but just a little. So I'm going a little.
A little. All right. Yeah. Brian, for the rest of the season, Aaron Jones will outscore A.J. Dillon by a lot, a little, or Dillon will outscore Jones.
Yeah, Fish took most of my talking points. He mentioned in Week 12, Dillon outscored Jones by a lot in that game. Jones was kind of a surprise active in that one, and the Packers kind of controlled that game against the Rams, so they didn't really need to push Jones to a certain extent, so Packers are on their bye. I still think they go Dillon. Jones as the lead back. They'll certainly mix in A.J. Dillon a lot. He's proven able to play at a very high level. But I'm with Fish in that Jones will outscore Dillon by a little bit.
You guys hit all of my talking points pretty much here. It is the correct answer is Aaron Jones will outscore A.J. Dillon by a little. But I think it's really, really close. And this, I think this is a hard question. Yeah. If you go back, I think it was weeks 10 and 11 or 11 and 12 when they were both healthy last, it was 14 touches to 15 touches for Dillon and Jones. It was that close. And Dillon is viewed as a cold weather mutter, as evidenced by last year's Tennessee game in the blustery stuff. Yes. 21 carries in that game. But also really salient to this topic is Dillon's improvement as a receiver. He's caught 13 passes the past three weeks.
But
to Scott's point, he isn't as natural of a receiver as Jones is. So I'm still giving the edge to Jones by a little bit. He's healthy. He's a proven special talent. And he's the better receiver. And he still gets more snaps and touches. The correct answer is a little.
Tough question number two.
If Saquon Barkley posts a dud this week against the hapless Chargers run defense, do you sabotage drop him next Tuesday? And for listeners that are maybe new to the show, the sabotage drop is when you drop a brand name player early in the week for the express purpose of having somebody use up waiver equity and then start somebody who's ultimately going to hurt them.
Yes.
That's the premise of the sabotage drop. Saquon Barkley next week. Brian.
Yeah, if he drops a dud against the Chargers on Sunday, I don't know how much of a sabotage drop it will be because this is the best matchup Barkley's got on the rest of his schedule. But if he drops a dud, I'm dropping Barkley for sure. I mean, the Giants' season is lost. Not to say that Dave Gettleman and or Joe Judge, the head coach, are going to do the right thing because they're pretty much going to get fired, I think. But they should shut down Barkley for the remainder of the year, especially if he doesn't have a good game against the Chargers. There are many things clearly wrong with that franchise. So, yeah, if he doesn't go off against, you know, even if he has a good game against the Chargers.
Yeah, I almost took that part out.
I think
of this
you should.
Question.
I think you really should. I think that makes more of a sabotage drop. So, either way, yeah, I'm sabotage dropping Saquon Barkley, unless I'm like super desperate at running back. But overall, yeah.
Scott.
It.
No, because unless you're in a 10-team league or a league with 12 roster spots, you're not finding better running back options out there, and neither are your league mates. We're talking about starting guys like Pirine and Wilson and Hasty, and we just talked about Burkhead maybe being a start, and you're going to... They're not producing what Barkley is, even in Barkley's duds game. You're only helping your opponent to, you know, not have to start Burkhead and being able to get Saquon Barkley.
The whole point of your sabotage drop is, again, to make an opponent use waiver wire equity. Would that happen if you dropped Saquon Barkley?
How much waiver wire money do people have left at this point in week 14?
Answer is yes. And then would somebody who picks him up then feel compelled to start Barkley and he'll ultimately hurt them? Answer, yes. The Chargers are your last good spot. The rest of the schedule is straight brutality for the Giants. There are no positive matchups left. In fact, every single team left is in the top quarter in fantasy points allowed to opposing running backs. We don't know when, if ever, Daniel Jones will return to help the offense. And at some point, they may just shut down massive parts of their wide receivers since these guys can never get healthy. And this is Pro Football Focus's 24th ranked run blocking line. And that's not going to help Barkley either. Answer, yes.
We're taking a chance on guys like Rashad Penny.
Tough question.
I'd rather
number
go to war
three.
With Rashad
wow.
Penny.
Okay.
Appropriate level of concern for James Robinson. Is it none, some, or a bowel loosening level of existential dread? Scott.
He's the best player on the team. Urban took a bunch of heat this week. We've mentioned it. I mentioned this already. I think it's a sneaky, squeaky wheel game. I think they get him a lot more work going forward. I think that's the way this goes. However, this offense doesn't move the ball very well. And as far as coaching goes, Urban Meyer makes Matt Nagy look like Andy Reid. Like, Urban Meyer is not good. So for those factors, not the production on the field, but for those factors, I'm going to say some.
Okay, some.
Yeah.
All right, Brian. Appropriate level of concern for James Robinson. None, some, or blowed.
Are you... I'm so tired of the benching of running backs after they fumble. Like, they're doing it on purpose, like putting them in the corner, like with the dunce cap, like, you'll learn your lesson never to fumble again.
Urban was like, Belichick does it, so it's got to work for me too.
It's just such a tired practice. I'm at some too, and it's really just because of the disciplinary reasons that I fear that Urban Meyer might bestow upon James Robinson moving forward. It's just the offense is pretty bad, and Robinson is the best player. He does have two promising matchups starting next week with the Texans and then the Jets in week 16. So, but still, I'm not blowed on J-Rob, not a little, but just some concern for him.
Here's your average game for James Robinson going all the way back to week 6. Week 6 was a long time ago. That's the middle of October. 10 carries, 43 yards, 0.4 touchdowns. That's it for James Robinson. And he chips in almost nothing as a receiver. 10 carries, 43 yards. That's terrible.
That's who you sabotage.
Heel injury is an ongoing problem for him. And if you just watch James Robinson run the ball, you can tell that foot is bothering him. He's not running with the same gusto that he used to run with. Jaguars have the 26th ranked run blocking offensive line by Pro Football Focus. No help coming there. Second lowest scoring overall offense at just 15 points per game for Jacksonville. And defenses don't have to sweat the passing game because they don't have one. Trevor Lawrence having a dismal season so far. And lastly, offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel's usage of Robinson is downright dispiriting. The correct answer? Blowed.
Oh, man.
No.
I can feel it in my insides. A bowel-loosening level of existential dread every time I think of starting.
I think I smell something.
I'm not ruling it out. That is possible. Let's go to the Lions taking on the Broncos. Scott, TJ Hockenson not expected to go in this game. Your player, your offensive player of the week is Jared Goff.
Yes.
You like that setup?
Yeah, I did not see that coming. I have Goff on the bench. I know it's crazy, but I just think he's not going to produce much. He's thrown for under 220 yards in over half his games. Jared Goff. He had a good game last week. Good for Jared Goff. The Broncos are allowing opposing quarterbacks an average of 235 yards, barely over a touchdown, and about one interception per game. That's probably the ceiling for Goff in this one. I am going to give a couple starting grades here, though. With Hawkinson out, I had my take a chance on me player be Josh Reynolds. I love his rapport with Goff and what he's done recently. Goff can throw for 200, and two receivers can have okay days.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, 80 yards for each, and maybe a score for one of them. Amon-Ra St. Brown, the sun god, who is the leading receiver, wide receiver for the Lions. As I said before the season, it just wasn't very fantasy right. startable. I got the call right. Not for fantasy, though. I have a C grade on him. he's on the field like 93% of the time. He gets he had 12 targets last week, but he's getting 6+ targets a game. I think with Hawkinson out, they're going to have to lean on Brown and Reynolds. They have no other options. So I can see a 6 to 10 plus target game for both Reynolds and Brown in this one. So I have C grades. They might just get there on volume. Maybe they get you a score. In the running game, Jamal Williams is placed on the COVID list on Friday.
Yes.
Which means he's vaccinated, so he could have a negative test Saturday. Maybe they test him Sunday. Maybe he can play, but it's pretty unlikely he's going to go. We're looking at a stack of Jamar Jefferson and Godwin Igwebique.
Yes.
I think Igwebique,
it's come to this.
Yeah, would be the one that gets the majority. He had a lot more snaps than Jamar Jefferson last week. He's played the backup role more. Or maybe, and watch what this is going to happen, they're going to promote Cutstown, University Golden Bear product, Craig Reynolds off the practice squad. Ooh. And he is going to vulture a touchdown so that everybody on Sunday is like, who is Craig Reynolds?
That could happen, actually.
That's probably what's going to happen. If you like anyone in this game, it's probably Godwin Igwebique, but I have them both, all three of them on the bench, even if they bring up Craig Reynolds.
Tough matchup anyway.
But you heard Craig Reynolds here if he scores a touchdown. On the other side, Teddy Bridgewater.
Ugh.
I have him on the bench. Don't worry. I can tell by your sigh. He hasn't had a multiple score game in 5 weeks. They mainly lean on their run game, which is what they should do with those running backs.
They have talented receivers.
Yeah.
The problem's Teddy. The problem isn't Jerry Judy.
It's not Sutton either.
And
Sutton
Cortland
is a good receiver.
No. So is Tim Patrick.
But Sutton hasn't topped 40 yards in the last 5 weeks since Jerry Judy came back.
What a disaster that's been.
So he's on the bench. Jerry Judy, I do have a B grade on. He's got 30 targets since returning. That's 6 per game. Unfortunately, he hasn't scored at all this year, and he's averaging just 55 scoreless yards. Man. He's had a couple 80-yard days.
A B grade because it's the Lions.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's the matchup. The opposing top receiver against the Lions this year averages 111 yards.
Not bad.
The average of the top receiver against the Lions. Most of them went over 100, obviously, with that average. Mm-hmm. So B grade on Jerry Jeudy. For the tight ends, Fant and Albert O, I have on the bench. They're monopolizing each other, and most of their work is at the line of scrimmage, and they don't get yards after the catch. it's a perfect storm of I don't know, terribleness. with the running game, B grade on Javonte Williams and a C grade on Melvin Gordon, who I do think goes. I know they were splitting the work very evenly before Melvin Gordon was out on injury. I think now they start to lean more and more towards Javonte Williams after what they saw. The Lions have been...
Man, I hope you're right, but this sounds like wishful fantasy guy talk.
He's coming in dinged up, too.
Well, I know, but Gordon practiced all week.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be way more frustrating than fantasy owners want to believe.
Yeah. I like the Denver beat writer who said Gordon practicing, which is good news. And everyone was like, who to who?
Yeah, right.
I want Gordon to be healthy. Like, good for Gordon. Contract next year.
We want bell cow Javonte Williams every week.
Well, no. And Gordon said this week he wants to come back next year to the Broncos.
Okay.
No, sir.
No.
Not welcome. Sorry.
He will not be the two over. Javonte won't be the two overall pick. He'll be a third
happens.
Rounder.
Mm-hmm.
Lions have given up 12 scores to or given up touchdowns to 12 different running backs this year. So I have starting grades on both those guys.
All right. When we come back, Raiders take on the Chiefs. The trickiest play of the entire week is Patrick Mahomes. We will give you the vast range of possible outcomes on Patrick Mahomes.
We were just talking Broncos and Broncos receivers, of course. I think we all want to pay our respects to Demaryius Thomas.
Yeah, great
true
point.
Legend. Yeah. Four consecutive top 12 PPR finishes from 2012 to 2015 among all positions. The guy is just an absolute legend.
Rest in peace to Marius Thomas. Yep. And for your fantasy necessities for this weekend, Patrick Mahomes. When we come back, what in the world to do with him? He's tortured your fantasy team for the better part of 6 weeks. We'll tell you what to expect when we return. It's Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Scott Fish, Brian Johnson with you. We continue on through the matchups of week number 14. Raiders at Chiefs. I want to start with the running game of the Raiders and Josh Jacobs, who did nothing when these teams met 10 weeks ago. Sorry, in week 10. But the Raiders are playing from behind throughout that game and got completely smoked in the second half. So, you know, the running game was never really a factor. Jacobs is sitting on a high volume game in all probability here because Kenyon Drake's out and Jalen Richard is likely to miss the game with COVID. So you're going to see a lot of Josh Jacobs in this game. KC is a good run defense. Only Javonte Williams last week was able to top 86 rushing yards. And it took Javonte Williams 23 carries to get there. But KC is allowing the eighth most receptions and the third most receiving yards per game to opposing running backs. And I think Josh Jacobs will help chip in some through-the-air mileage for you as well. Seven different backs have topped five catches against Kansas City, and I think Jacobs is going to get to that five-catch mark and potentially over that. So B grade on Josh Jacobs in this one.
Somewhat random. I haven't fully fact-checked this, but Jacobs is only 1 month older than Najee Harris,
I believe. That's weird.
Yeah.
Wow. Let's go over to the passing game, and I want to start with receiver Hunter Renfrow, who's been very consistent. And with Waller out of the lineup last week, he saw double-digit targets for the first time this year, notched his second consecutive 100-yard game last week. He has now scored or hit 100 yards in four of the last five games. He's been highly startable ever since the Henry Ruggs situation. Renfrow tagged KC for a touchdown in Week 10. Slot corner Legarius Sneed gives up a 76% catch rate and a passer rating of 107, and he gave up his fourth score of the year last week. So Hunter Renfrow comes in with a solid B here. Foster Moreau was a popular pivot at tight end last week. Oof. I liked him last week, and he was bad. Well, he wasn't bad. They just didn't throw to him.
Yeah.
I think you go back to the well a little bit here.
Ooh.
And on the season, the Chiefs are allowing the eighth most fantasy points per game to opposing tight ends. They've been better lately, though, allowing the second fewest fantasy points to tight ends over the past 5 weeks. In the Week 10 meeting, Waller, healthy then, was targeted seven times but turned him into just 24 scoreless yards. I've got a C grade on Foster Moreau because who else do you even throw to? Well, throw to Jacobs, Renfrow. Throw to Renfrow. That's a then
23 targets to Renfrow.
It might be. Derek Carr, if those are the receiver grades I've got, I like Derek Carr at just a C level here. Mm-hmm. Since the Ruggs tragedy, the Raiders passing game just hasn't been the same. Who knew Henry Ruggs on the limited usage he was getting was so pivotal?
But he kept the top off. He kept a safety deep, etc.
That's exactly it, I think. Further complicating matters, no Darren Waller here. Carr's track record against the Chiefs is solid. Multiple touchdowns in three straight games, including his 261-yard, two-touchdown game in Week 10 against this same team. But the Chiefs' secondary has become really good. Remember how terrible the Chiefs were at the start of the season?
Yep.
It's reversed completely. Since Week 6, the Chiefs have per-game averages of just 228 yards and one touchdown pass per game. That's it. Derek Carr, C grade. Now let's go to the toughest call of the entire week, I think by a mile, Patrick Mahomes, and what do you do with him? So, when these teams met in Week 10, Mahomes went berserk, throwing for 400 yards and five touchdowns. But in the five games surrounding the Raiders game, he's averaging 218 yards and 0.4 touchdowns.
It's been bad.
How bad is 218 yards and 0.4 touchdowns? The only starting quarterback over that same span with worse than 218 yards and 0.4 touchdowns is
Trevor Lawrence.
That's it. The only quarterback worse than Mahomes.
Yeah.
And on top of everything else, the Raiders secondary has been, on the whole, awesome this year. Except for the Mahomes game in Week 10. So this is why it's so hard.
Yeah. I think Mahomes and Trevor Lawrence have more combined commercials than passing touchdowns this season.
You may be correct about that. Vegas ranks number 2 in pass rush by Pro Football Focus. They've got the excellent cornerbacks, Casey Hayward and impressive rookie Nate Hobbs. 3 of the past 5 quarterbacks to face the Raiders haven't even hit 196 passing yards. I went between a B and C grade on Patrick Mahomes for a long time.
What could you do in this instance?
I don't know. I'm a man about it, we go whole letter grades, and I decided on a B grade for Patrick Mahomes. He is my 11th ranked quarterback this week. Tyreek Hill faced the Raiders secondary in Week 10, torched him for 2 touchdowns in that game. They gave up 5 in the game. But here's the funny thing. They found ways to get him not on Casey Hayward, primarily because they ran him in the slot a lot. And they could do that again here. That puts Tyreek Hill up against Nate Hobbs. And Hobbs is pretty good, but it also puts him up against safety Jonathan Abram. And that's where Hill roasted this team. And if they can get that Abram matchup again, I like Hill. I've got a B grade on him, but he has also struggled significantly over the past 6 weeks. He's had dud games, so there is some caution here, and that's why you only have the B grade on Tyreek Hill. Travis Kelce coming off a down game. He smoked the Raiders in Week 10 like everybody else did. And the Raiders have struggled defending tight ends. They're 31st in fantasy points allowed to the position, including consecutive top 12 finishes by opposing tight ends. So an A grade on Travis Kelce in this game. Let's talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Over the last 5 games, the Raiders are allowing 150 total yards per game to opposing running backs, which, if put over the whole season, would be 6th most. Starters are doing most of the damage. Starters alone are averaging over 110 total yards in a score against the Raiders. I like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who is seeing more and more playing time as he gets healthier, and now really should be at full health. We've got a B grade on Clyde Edwards-Helaire in this matchup. I like him here. Giants take on the Chargers, Brian. There is not much left of this Giants offense. Let's start with Saquon Barkley. We talked, as we alluded to in the last segment, this feels like the last great chance to start Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, he was put on the injury report this week with an ankle issue, so just monitor that. But he's likely to play, and if he does, it's a good matchup. I'll give him a B if Barkley suits up. The Chargers are allowing more than 140 combo yards and one whole touchdown per game to opposing running back, so a B for Barkley. And if for some reason he does sit, Devontae Booker, an easy C for him, who will fill in as the starting running back if Barkley is out. Speaking of out, Kadarius Toney is out at wide receiver. Sterling Shepard is questionable, but you pretty much just always rule out Sterling Shepard if he's questionable at this point in the week. So that leaves us with Kenny Galladay and Darius Slayton. Talking about the Giants wide receiver is just incredibly depressing.
You know, you don't have to do it. You're not obligated to at all. Nobody cares.
They're both on the bench, Galladay and Slayton.
Yeah,
Chris Harris likely to play. He's on the COVID reserve list as of now, but he should play. Asante Samuel should make his return. He missed last week with a non-COVID issue. So Galladay, Slayton on the bench. Evan Engram, I will give him a C. The Chargers have surrendered the second most touchdowns to the tight end position at 9. But Mike Glennon is your quarterback. Not like Daniel Jones is any better, but I mean,
he's probably a little better. But
if you're starting,
Ingram's had all these positive matchups that we keep thinking, well, this is a positive matchup. It never materializes for him.
Go get
maybe he's just not good.
Go be a Hooper scooper, or even Nick Vinette,
or
Pharaoh Brown. Even like there are better options than Evan Engram out there. Okay, that's enough for the Giants. Over to the Chargers side, Austin Eckler, easy A here. The Giants are allowing 150-plus combo yards per game. Easy A for Eckler. Sadly, an easy bench for Keenan Allen, who's been ruled out with the virus. It was a great matchup for him. The Giants are top 5 in targets yielded and touchdowns allowed to wide receivers. So if Mike Williams plays, he gets an A. Very good games in 2 of his last 3. But if for whatever reason he's ruled out, well, Jalen Guyton was my take a chance to be wide receiver before anyone was ruled out. But now,
yes.
Keenan Allen out. If Mike Williams is out, Jalen Guyton gets an A, I guess.
I don't know. That seems high.
That's maybe a B.
We'll go under the presumption that Mike Williams plays.
I don't think Mike Williams not playing helps Guyton. I think it hurts Guyton.
You're probably right. So Guyton, a very solid C. And then again, Josh Palmer, keep that name in mind. Rookie Josh Palmer could be very viable if Williams sits. So you're still going to want to start whatever healthy pass catchers are out there for the Chargers. Let's put it that way against the Giants, including Jared Cook at tight end. I'm a little worried about Donald Parham stealing some targets from Cook. But
he's scoring in this one.
Cook
you're
is?
Calling
or
shot.
Or Parham.
He's scoring in this one.
Cook?
No,
Parham. Okay, well,
we're Parham.
I hope
Parham
so. I got him in a ton of best ball leagues. I would much rather have Parham score over Cook, but a good matchup. Giants allowing 5.5 catches, nearly 60 yards per game to the tight end. And Justin Herbert, I mean, his grade obviously depends on the availability of Mike Williams, but even if Williams is out, you still got to love the air bear in this one. I'll give him just a safe B against the Giants. Good quarterbacks have fared well against the Giants. Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford, Patrick Mahomes is still a good quarterback, I guess, and Tom Brady combined to average 284 yards and 2.5 passing touchdowns against the Giants this year. So Air Bear could do the same.
Bills take on the Bucks, Scott, and we're going to throw out last week's game.
Yep.
Don't care anything about
That's
what happened in the cold wind game.
First, we're throwing out last week's Monday.
Perfect. All right, great.
Monday night slogfest.
All right, so talk to me about the Bills and this offense and what you like against the Buccaneers.
So earlier I mentioned this game is, to you, off air. I said this game is basically all A's, maybe a few B's. So I went and checked. This game has two quarterbacks in both of our top five, three wide receivers in both of our top 15, and two tight ends in both of our top six, and a running back in both of our top five.
Okay.
So
there's a lot to like here.
On the Bills side, my number one quarterback for the week, actually, Josh Allen, A grade, thrown out last week's game. But before that, before last week, he had multiple scores in 9 of his last 10. The Bucs started the season poor against quarterbacks, have held down passing numbers decent recently, but those quarterbacks were Jalen Hurts, Justin Fields, Trevor Siemian, Tyler Heineke, Daniel Jones, just some pure tossy-tossers right there.
Tossy-tossers.
Just really good quarterbacks they've held down. The last 2 weeks, Wentz and Ryan managed to throw for about 300 each. Bucs D is healthier, but Allen's still getting the grade, 300-plus and a couple scores, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Diggs, A grade, remains the only wide receiver you can start with confidence, in my opinion. The other three just monopolize each other too much. None of the other three are even finding their way to 50 yards very often. Oh. So the top receiver against the Bucs has had 100-plus and or scored in 4 of the last five games, and Diggs himself has scored in 6 of the last 7 before that Monday night game.
Right.
He also sees 9 targets per game. So A grade on Stephon Diggs.
Nine times.
B grade on Dawson Knox. Despite saying I was throwing out the Monday night game, he still had 6 targets.
Pretty impressive.
A couple drops, one knocked
there
out of his hands.
Drops, yes.
But still, they trusted him in that weather for 6 targets, which I kind of like.
And they throw to him in the end zone.
Yep. This year, he has scored 9 times.
9 times.
That's a lot for a tight end.
It is.
And is constantly looked to in the red zone. He gets Firemuth like level looks in the red zone.
Well, he's missed a few games too, which is even more impressive.
Yep. Bucks are bottom 10 against tight ends, although it's been more like death by 1,000 paper cuts. A ton of 20 to 50 yard days by multiple tight ends on the same team. Knox gets basically all the tight ends.
Yeah.
So all the running backs are on the bench though. I will say last week's Moss output, they weren't going to have Breda in there. He's a pass catcher. They were not going to have him in there for that you know, windy, snowy game. That wasn't going to be his game.
Right.
I think he comes back for this one. If you're really in a pinch, maybe, but I have a bench grade on him. Over to the Tampa Bay side. A grade on Tom Brady. He's my number 3 quarterback. I think he's like your number 4 or 5.
Yeah. It's the whole thing. It pivots on Tre'Davious White not, you know, being out now on IR.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Without him, that takes a really key element of this Buffalo passing game off
Absolutely.
The field. It didn't matter last week because nobody threw against Buffalo, but it will this week.
Yep. And this game has an implied total in the mid-50s. It's scheduled to be a shootout. Like the Bucs, the Bills have held down a lot of QBs, like Ben Roethlisberger, Jacoby Brissett, Heineke, Davis Mills, Tannehill, Tua, Trevor, Mike White, Wentz, Siemian. Like the guys they've held down, their entire schedule has been a cupcake QB schedule. Tre'Davious White now out. Brady has just 2 games where he failed to have multiple scores this year. he has finished as a top five quarterback for the week 7 times. Mm. So I have him in my top five once again. Godwin, A grade. This is a much meatier matchup than I thought it was.
Despite
all the A grades. A grade for Godwin. Without Tre'Davious White, he wouldn't have covered him anyway. He would have been on Evans on the outside. He wouldn't have covered Godwin in the slot probably, or most of the time. But the Bills have played one game without Tre'Davious White, and that was the crap fest last Monday night. So we don't even have any data points on what it's like to pass against this team without Tre'Davious White this year. That said, the Bills have only allowed 3 wide receiver touchdowns all year and no 100-yard receivers. Mm. That's concerning. But last week, Godwin activated God mode against Atlanta. Antonio Brown out. The targets really, really funneled to Godwin and Evans. Rashad Perriman has taken on that wide receiver 3 role. He has overtaken Tyler Johnson, but he's doing nothing with it. All the targets are going to Evans and Godwin. So an A on Godwin, a B on Evans. He's gained the targets yard. He's not getting Godwin's targets, yards, or receptions, but he's got 10 touchdowns on the year. He's got 23 with Brady in 2 years. That's where he scores. He's got a high odds of scoring here.
Speaking of high odds of scoring.
Yeah, Gronkowski, A grade. Uh-huh. It's just obvious to this point, though. Like, he was tight end 2 before he left. I think he's tight end 2 again now after he's back from his injury. His worst game was 4 catches for 55 yards, which is like,
that's a decent, best game for a lot of tight ends.
B grade. Yeah. His floor is a B grade, and he's got tight end 1 upside every game. Leonard Fournette, A grade. He leads all NFL running backs in receptions, which, of course, we obviously knew that was going to happen. Receiving leader for running backs. He has at least 6 catches in each of the last 4 games, basically a lock for 16 to 25 touches. With that reception total, receptions coming in, I got an A grade on him.
Yeah. It makes sense. Leonard Fournette has been money for, I don't know, 3-4 weeks and really most of the year.
Yeah.
Going back to Gronk, it's like a reverse homecoming. He used to murder the Bills when he's with the Patriots because he's from Buffalo. Just monster games, like week in and week, or every time he faced Buffalo.
When we come back, 2 matchups left, the Sunday Nighter and the Monday Nighter. Bears taking on the Packers. We'll tell you what to expect from David Montgomery. And how many points do you need? Do you need a calculator to try to figure out how many points Devontae Adams is going to score in this game? We'll talk about that when we come back. Final segment, Fantasy Football Weekly, coming up. It's the final segment of Fantasy Football Weekly. Our last chance to get you ready to improve your playoff positioning. Paul Charchi and Scott Fish and Brian Johnson with you. The Sunday night game is Bears taking on the Packers. Let's talk about David Montgomery. Came into the week hobbled, came out of the week not on the injury report. Should be in a good spot here. In 4 career games against Green Bay, David Montgomery averages a solid 17 touches for 92 yards, and he has scored in 2 of the 4 games. But I think he's going to get a little more activity than that, in part because Justin Fields is back under center, and he averages just 20 passes per game, the lowest of any starting quarterback in the league. And if that means that he's going to have that low of a volume, it means Montgomery's got to have more touches than just 17 per game. Green Bay, though, is a good run defense. No back has hit triple digits all year, and they've only given up 1 rushing touchdown in their last 4 games. So a B grade on David Montgomery. I like the volume. I don't love the matchup here. Let's go to the passing game. Darnell Mooney's about the only guy worth talking about. Packers allow the 4th highest average depth of target, which is salient for him because Darnell Mooney is very fast, and the deep connection with the big arm of Justin Fields is tantalizing. But the Packers secondary likely or maybe gets back Jair Alexander and Kevin King to bolster a defense that has allowed some big games without them, but if they're back, I'm nervous on Mooney, and I've just got the C grade on him. Allen Robinson's expected to make his return from this long-standing hamstring injury.
Who?
But I know, right? A bad time to be coming into free agency for Allen Robinson. I just don't think – I worry that he's not going to get the full workload here.
I have a league with pretty sharp people, and he's not even rostered right now.
Dang, that says a lot. Justin Fields is on the bench as well. It's a difficult matchup against a good secondary. As I mentioned, Jair Alexander, Kevin King potentially coming back. Fields struggled in this matchup in week 6. throwing for a meager 174 yards and completing barely half his passes. He ran for 43 yards in that game, and that's your only hope for fantasy relevance here for Justin Fields is on the ground. Five different quarterbacks have run for at least 32 yards against the Packers. 32 is not even that much. Mm-mm. In the three games prior to Fields' injury, Matt Nagy allowed him to run 8 times, 11 times, and 8 times. So that's really important. This is where the fantasy points can come from for Justin Fields is on the ground. I've got a bench grade on him, but you could hope that he gets another 8 through 11 rushes, and he could turn that into 40 or 50 yards and move him up to a C.
8, 8, and 11, that averages out to 9 times over the three course.
Why, you don't say.
9 times.
How nice.
9 times.
All right, let's go over to Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams are obvious A's. They are my number one ranked players at their respective positions. How about going a little deeper into the depth chart? MVS is a possible dart throw here because the Bears have got one good cornerback, Jalen Johnson, and he'll travel with Davante Adams. They let him shadow if there's an opposing number one receiver who's really good. He's shadowed in the past. That puts MVS on some combination of Artie Burns, Xavier Crawford, and our old friend Kendall Vildor. These guys at best rank 138th at the cornerback position by Pro Football Focus. That's the high watermark for those guys.
Are we sure there's even that many cornerbacks?
I know. You wouldn't think there would be that many cornerbacks. So MVS gets a C grade for me. Let's go to the running game, and I think this is going to be frustrating for a lot of people. So now fully healthy, does Aaron Jones return to his lead back role? We alluded to this earlier in the show. A.J. Dillon's usage was climbing to the point that they were at an even split last time they were both healthy. What's more, Dillon's looked good over the last three games as the primary back. He's earned plenty of timeshare here. Only one runner has topped 81 rushing yards against Chicago all year. And over the past 5 weeks, they've only given up 76 rushing yards per game and 25 receiving yards per game. So if there's only 100 total yards, air and ground to go around, and if Dillon and Jones are going to split that in half, I can only give them C grades. And Aaron Jones was a first-round pick, but I can only give him a C grade in this one because of the timeshare, and Chicago's much harder to run upon than pass. Let's go to the Monday night game. Rams taking on the Cardinals, Brian. For the Rams passing game, Matthew Stafford's been pretty inconsistent as a passer, but mostly he's ended up with pretty good fantasy box scores. What do you think about him in this matchup against an, frankly, pretty good Arizona secondary?
Yeah, speaking of fantasy box scores, Stafford had a fantasy box score against the Cardinals in Week 4. These teams met once already this season, divisional rivals, of course. This will be the second meeting. In that first meeting, Stafford had 280 yards and 2 passing touchdowns. Kind of feels like a somewhat safe floor for him here, especially considering Andy Dalton just threw for 2 scores in the rain against the Cardinals last week. So I'm going to give Matt Stafford a B, mostly because he has Cooper Kupp. Not going to give Kupp an A, though. He's working through a toe injury. Mm-hmm. A very firm B here, Scott. I know.
Okay. No, you're fine.
He's called that on this show a B.
He's always has a potential, of course. When these teams first met, he did only have 5 catches for 64 yards, probably his worst game of the season.
Yeah.
But I don't care. Still a very strong play. The Cardinals have allowed the 4th most wide receiver touchdowns of that this season. But that said, the Cardinals are bottom 8 in catches and bottom 4 in yards, and that's in terms of the most.
Bottom 8
in terms of the most, so like not a good thing for Cooper Kupp.
Okay.
They're top 8 fewest yards.
Okay.
In top
so
4.
They are what the Cardinals are is a
pretty
bust but don't break, bend but don't break. They are a break but don't bend defense. That's what they are.
They're not a cake matchup, that's for sure. We'll put it that way. And that's why Van Jefferson and Odell Beckham Jr. both get a C. Since OBJ's arrival, Jefferson has out-targeted Beckham 24-18 and has put up better numbers than OBJ, scoring in back-to-back games. Van Jefferson, that is. Beckham did score last week as well, though. And it's worth noting that Beckham did face the Rams this year earlier as a member of the Cleveland Browns, had 5 catches for 79 yards. But just a C for both of those guys. Tyler Higbee, he's on the bench. He's the 5th wheel in this offense, just 4 catches for 36 yards. in the first meeting. So Bench and Higbee, go grab, scoop yourself some Hooper. Be a Hooper scooper.
Hooper scooper.
And lastly for the Rams, Daryl Henderson should make his return, and Sean McVay made it clear that Henderson will be the lead back if he is active, even though he was active last week.
So, let's just pause on this for a second. This is the Monday night game.
It is.
We are probably, there's a good chance we won't know Henderson's status at kickoff on Sunday. Now what do you do?
He's trending towards playing. I mean, clearly, if you've got, you got to be in a pretty.
I mean, he was active last week, too.
Yeah,
he was active. Didn't matter.
I'm going under the premonition he will play. Hopefully you have Sony Michel on roster as well alongside Henderson. But I'll give Henderson the B, and Michel will get the B if Henderson isn't active. But let's hope Henderson does play. Arizona allowing 4.7 yards per carry. That is good for Henderson. But the Cardinals have allowed just 5 total touchdowns to running backs all year. That's second fewest. That is bad. I will note that Henderson did have 100-plus combo yards when these teams first met in Week 4, so that should be a safe floor for Henderson if he goes, but he will. All right, that's it for the Rams. Over to the Cardinals side. James Conner, just to see here with Chase Edmonds expected to make his return, that kind of puts Conner back in the goal line change of pace role, one would think. And goal line touchdowns aren't easy to come by against the Rams, who have only allowed 3 rushing scores to running backs since Week 4. So just to see for James Conner, I am benching Chase Edmonds, though. We got to see what we have there. And we know it's usually not much.
No, here's what you got is no touchdowns. Yeah. We can say that for sure for Chase Edmonds.
That's almost a given for sure. So he is on the bench. And DeAndre Hopkins close to being on the bench, but he should be healthier than last week. He did score last week, but just to see for DeAndre Hopkins, the Rams have struggled against wide receivers as of late, allowing the 9th most catches and yards per game to the position over the last 5 weeks, but Hopkins likely to draw shadow coverage from Jalen Ramsey, who allows just 32 yards per game in his coverage and has just allowed 2 touchdowns all season long. And as a Cardinal, Hopkins' numbers aren't great against the Rams. He's averaging just 5 receptions for 51 yards, but that's double-digit PPR points. Hopefully a floor for him here. Christian Kirk, the last wide receiver we'll mention for the Cardinals, going to give him a C. Again, the Rams allowing the 9th most catches and the 9th most yards per game to the position over the last 5 weeks. He should not get shadow coverage from Ramsey, so a C for Christian Kirk. Zach Ertz, going to give him a B. Ertz wasn't on the Cardinals when these teams first met, but Max Williams did have a great game. He had 6 catches for 66 yards and a touchdown. He finished top 6 among tight ends this week. And what's more, opposing tight ends have seen the 7th most targets against the Rams. And opposing tight ends haven't seen less than 5 targets in any game against the Rams. So they're heavily utilized. So I like Ertz here. Going to give him a B. And lastly, Kyler Murray, your son's favorite player, Scott. Yep. What's up, Ian Fish, my friend? Going to give Kyler Murray an A. The Rams aren't an ideal matchup, but they are one of 10 teams with an opponent passing play percentage of 60% or higher. Recently, LA has surrendered 300-plus yards and 2 passing touchdowns to the likes of Jimmy Garoppolo and Davis Mills. And in the first meeting, Kyler Murray threw for 268 and had 2 touchdowns, also added 39 rushing touchdowns. So a safe B floor, but I'm shooting for the A upside. He gets the A grade here.
That sounds about right. Wow, that was a lot of guys to talk about. Jeez.
It should be a good game.
That's the Monday night game. We'll see how that one ends up working out. If you are listening to the show over the air, know that we are also podcast. You can also podcast Fantasy Football Weekly and vice versa. If you are podcasting, know that you can oftentimes hear this show in your local market on your favorite sports talk radio station, Fantasy Football Weekly. Best of luck with this in your playoff positioning week. We'll be back for a playoff edition of Fantasy Football next week, and we encourage you to check in then. Back in a week, everybody. Bye-bye. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.